5, 4, 3, 2, and 1.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. The German news agency...
We interrupt this program to bring you a news bulletin from Washington. The White House has just announced...
Here is a news bulletin. Shots have reportedly been fired.
Here's another late development, and this news keeps coming in.
This is an NBC News hotline report.
Special report. Verdict sparks violence. National earthquake.
Secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Can your heart stand the shocking facts of the true story of Joshua P. Warren?
Of the sky and to high strangers around the globe. This is Speaking of Strange with Joshua P. Warren.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight regarding the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual, and we don't just discuss it, we go in the field to investigate. Let's start tonight in Pennsylvania. Here we go again, folks. Police in Pennsylvania recently got a 911 call from a man claiming, well, apparently he had shot Bigfoot. He said that he needed the Game Commission to get in touch with him. He requested a police officer come to his residence. He said he has the proof there of Bigfoot. A police officer... officer was dispatched to the man's residence. What he found there has become a matter of dispute and speculation. There is no official word, oddly enough, on exactly how this has turned out, but the rumor is that a guy has supposedly shot and killed Bigfoot, and whatever's going on, they say very shortly afterward, a helicopter was seen hovering over this man's home. That's from Fox News. So we'll keep an eye on this because I have, as you may know, very serious doubts that Bigfoot is something you could shoot and kill, but maybe he just shot a big hairy guy hanging out in his backyard. Who knows? Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, author of books like Haunted Asheville, How to Hunt Ghosts, and The Secret Wisdom of Kukulcan. I'm founder and president of Lemur Paranormal Investigations. My producer and engineer is Mr. Hardwood Forrest Connor. Good evening, Forrest.
Good evening, Joshua. You know, being from Fox News, it has to be a fair and balanced reporting, so, you know, who knows? It's probably true.
Well, I do remember when Fox News gave such great coverage to the great Bigfoot hoax there of, I believe, 2008
that
we have talked about.
Was that the Tom Biscardi
affair? That's right, yes. Biscardi was actually on Fox News with Megan, what's her name?
Kelly.
Megan Kelly, yes. I remember watching him be interviewed there, and he actually invited her to come out to the big unveiling even. So, I don't know. It's odd to me that obviously the authorities are involved with this, but we don't have an official report, so we'll keep a close eye on that. And in the studio, as usual, investigator Shelley Wright of Wright's Coin Shop, what is your gut telling you? Do you think there is a dead Bigfoot lying in some backyard in Pennsylvania?
I don't know about a Bigfoot. I'm thinking some kind of hairy beastie, human or just dressed up. But Bigfoot in Pennsylvania, I don't know about that.
Could be my brother's wife.
Ooh.
Well, you know, I've told you guys before, there are 5-foot-tall monkeys running around Puerto Rico here, and you know, if you have a big monkey like that that happens to be in your yard, it's one of these deals where it escapes from the zoo or something. It's possible somebody could see that, but would you immediately shoot it? I mean, that's always the question with these scenarios. Philosophically, legally, what's the safest bet? Do you shoot or not? I don't know. But boy, do we have a lot of weird news tonight. Just a whole stack of it. And obviously, we didn't do the show, a new show, last week because I was in the field on an expedition here in Puerto Rico. But two things I want to tell you about. This first hour of the show, and of course I've got plenty of weird news, but I want to tell you about a personal experience that I had here in Puerto Rico. Now, this is a very interesting experience because, you know, I talk about how we are in the heart of the Bermuda Triangle. And I think a reason a lot of the government experimentation takes place down here is that this is not a state. It's simply a territory. And so the laws here are very ambiguous and convoluted, and boy, did I get a first-hand inside look at that. I think you'll find it amazing, the story I'm going to tell you about my experience over the past week or so dealing with the Puerto Rican government on getting my car shipped down here. Because I'm doing a lot of running around the island, and I realized it was going to be more affordable to ship my car than to continue renting the car or buy a car. And my goodness, this is a rare glimpse, a gringo perspective of what it's like to be down here and deal with this very odd government. And hour number two, I have a fun, exciting announcement that I'm going to make. I'm going to break a brand new piece of news here on the show tonight during hour two. And it's one of those things that those of you who know me well will not be surprised. But those of you who only listen to me on the radio, you might be quite surprised by what I'm going to tell you hour number two of tonight's show. So there are plenty of interesting, fun things in store. How does that sound, guys? Am I being teasing enough?
You're being loud and clear, Mr. Warren.
Good, good. And I figure before I start telling you about my experience with the government, I want to squeeze in some odd news stories because, you know, since every time we skip a week, I mean, the news stories just are really piling up. And most of the time when my research team sends me stories, I just get the text. Once in a while, there's a picture attached. So I have this story here from a place called Get Ready Forest of Aventura, Florida. That's right. That's our Florida bell. We get so many Florida stories, we denote them with a bell. Now, imagine this. You can go on a hiking trail in this wooded area there near what they call the Oleta River. And you're walking out there by yourself in the middle of nowhere. It seems like it's a very nice, natural setting. You turn a corner on the trail, and all of a sudden, you almost crap your pants. Because standing there in the middle of the trail is a 6'5" clown, okay? No. And this is the least likely thing.
No.
To see on this trail in the middle of this big, huge forest. And, I mean, this picture, even the picture is creepy as hell. I bet Mobius has got this posted on our Facebook page. Turns out that this is a mannequin that somebody took the liberty of placing there and tying and supporting for no other reason than to just horrify unsuspecting hikers. And, you know, it seems like such a simple but fun thing to do. We need to try that out, don't we, Forrest?
We do.
We could put a little camera on it and just get reactions. And so I'm, anytime we have a clown story, it kind of stands out. So I read that one, and I say, oh, well, that's creepy picture. And then I turn right around, and here's another clown story. It's like, oh, here we go. Yeah, we see the patterns beginning to emerge. Here is a clown story from Kingston Springs, Tennessee. So that's very close to our flagship station there, 570 in Asheville, North Carolina. Story says, two large men dressed in black and wearing bloody clown masks invaded a home, and the victim was so scared that he admitted to police that he was a drug dealer and that he crapped his pants.
Wow.
You see the consistency? This is what happens when clowns get involved. People start crapping themselves. So now, officers are in the process of sorting everything out, and they're basically arresting everybody involved, even the victim. So these accused home invaders, they stole flat-screen televisions, thousands of dollars in cash, and the victim's marijuana.
Oh, no.
yes. The horror. And so according to the cops there, they say, quote, when someone calls you and openly admits narcotics were stolen from their house, it just kind of speaks to the severity of the crime and how frightened this individual was, end quote. That's from the detective there at the Drug Task Force. So I'm starting to see this clown pattern popping up here. Now, Forrest, I know you don't like clowns. Shelley, what's your opinion on clowns?
No, I'm indifferent. If I run across one, I can always punch it.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I have a clown fear or phobia. Where do you think yours comes from, Forrest? Did you once get your behind kicked by a clown? What happened?
I don't know. I think it's just something deep seated. I think I saw It a little too early in life.
Ooh, that was creepy.
I mean,
they all float down here.
I mean, Tim Curry in anything. Pretty scary.
It's so scary.
That's true. And I was talking about how I often don't get photographs with these news stories, but then here I get another one that's got a photograph. This is a very visual night of news. So again, I'm thinking Mobius probably has this thing posted at the Speaking of Strange Facebook page. Scientists have been doing a lot of calculations looking at the way our genes are evolving. And they have determined, to some what they believe is a high degree of accuracy, what humans are probably going to look like in 100,000 years. And the picture is quite striking. And the reason they think we're going to look this way seems rather plausible. We're going to have to take a break here. When we come back, I will tell you what humans are probably going to look like in 100,000 years. And then I'm going to get into this story about my personal behind-the-scenes experiences dealing with this ambiguous government in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle. I am Joshua P. Warren, and you're listening to the show where we dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, and the downright weird. It's called Speaking of Strange, and the fun really kicks off when we return right after this.
the heart of the Bermuda Triangle, hitchhiking Puerto Rico's extraterrestrial highway. I'm your host, the Wizard of Weird, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange. Don't forget, you can go to speakingofstrange.com for a live chat during the show, regular updates on weird news around the world, more information on topics discussed, and links to the official Haunted Asheville Ghost Tour. That's right, hauntedasheville.com, running strong, hauntedasheville.com. You'll also find our Facebook page, Twitter, etc. And, you know, it's very interactive, and you can go and see that, you know, we don't make up these stories. They are supposedly true. And the weather right now is getting really perfect to go out and enjoy some of the tours that we're offering. So before the break, I was mentioning that, well, coming up hour number two, I have a very fun, exciting announcement I'm going to make. So I hope all of you will stay tuned for that. I'm about to tell you a little story, but first, scientists have been doing some work on trying to predict what the human face is going to look like in 100,000 years. And they have found that if you look at the most reliable evidence, that our brains are going to continue to enlarge, which is going to broaden and heighten our foreheads. Also, our eyes are going to get much larger because of the visual input that we get from our devices and the additional information that will be necessary to feed a bigger brain. And basically, we are going to look like anime characters. So we're going to have big old bobbleheads with big eyes. And what does that sound like, Forrest?
Sounds like a gray to me.
It sounds like aliens, doesn't it?
It does.
It sounds like that we are heading in the same direction of humanoid aliens, and that's why I have to wonder if it's not most likely that aliens are actually humans from the future. I mean, that would explain a lot. I mean, for one thing, because, you know, you hear about all these scientists who say the universe is so incomprehensibly gigantic, so unimaginably infinite, that even if we found quote-unquote intelligent life out there, it's unlikely that they would look like us, that they would look so much like us that they would have two arms and two legs and two eyes and two nostrils and a mouth, etc. Well, if they are actually humans from the future, it would explain why that we do have that basic humanoid similarity, and it would also explain why they are so elusive and will always be so elusive, because obviously if they've learned to go back in time, they don't want to screw up the timelines too much. So, I mean, it's probably one of the more believable options that the so-called aliens, or at least the ones that we're most familiar with, are maybe more like time travelers from the future than they are visitors from another part of the universe. So you got to see this picture, though. I mean, the picture is not so overdone that it looks ridiculous. You know, I mean, it's subtle enough that it's believable. But if you met somebody like this, you would say, okay, well, you know, you kind of look like you're tripping on LSD. You know, that's not that I would know that, of course, from personal experience or anything. But the heads just look a little bit out of whack and weird and exaggerated. So that's what you have to look forward to if you are reincarnated in 100,000 years. So I've got a story for you guys. And, you know, by the way, for those of you listening to the show, Forrest and Shelley are at the studio in Asheville. I'm way out here in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean on the island of Puerto Rico. And it's a miracle that we're able to broadcast the way that we are. And probably for a lot of people, it sounds like we're just sitting in the studio together. But once in a while, my signal may sort of drop in and out. Am I sounding okay now, Forrest?
You're sounding better, yes, sir.
Okay, that's good. So for those of you listening, if you hear my voice sound a little weird or drop in or out once in a while, you'll know that's just the price you pay for being able to go out here and broadcast from the Bermuda Triangle. That's the least of the weird things that can happen here. But I want to tell you guys a little story because, you know, I've mentioned that there is always this odd ambiguity regarding the laws here in Puerto Rico, and I think that that has been taken advantage of by the U.S. government for experimentation, whether that involves UFOs or doing experiments on the lab monkeys. And let me just reiterate, I have still never talked to anybody nor read any resource that has explained exactly what the nature of those experiments were they were doing with those monkeys. And I think that's weird. It was obviously some top secret stuff. It was happening many decades ago, but still, I have not seen any record of what that was. So if any of you happen to know, I'd love to hear what you have to say. But I want to give you an example of how the government works around here and how that actually makes it easy if some entity is wanting to come here, some organization, and do some kind of experiments and bury the whole thing under confusing paperwork. As I had said before, I decided to have a car shipped down here from North Carolina. And I knew it was going to be expensive. It costs thousands of dollars to do this. It costs way, way more than it should. And the amount depends on the value of your car because they figure up some type of inflated percentage. But, you know, even for a cheap car, you're talking about putting out easily, you know, over $3,000 to get the car shipped down here, easily. So you really have to sit down and figure out if this is something that you want to spend some money on. So, in my case, it seemed that it would be worth it with all the running around that I'm doing here on the island. And so there are companies that you can hire that sort of coordinate all this for you because it takes a bunch of different little components, being like four different organizations working together. You've got to have somebody to get your car from wherever it is to a port, and then from the port it has to get onto the ship, and then from the ship's got to take it down to the other port, and the other port's got to release it to you with the permission of the government, and that's when the government gets involved. And then you also have to get the IRS involved, and you have to get some type of a number from them. And, I mean, it's like five or six things have to all work together to make this happen. So I worked with this company based out of Florida to sort of coordinate this for me. And they did a really good job. And basically they said, okay, your car is going to be at the port in San Juan on this day. And you're going to have 7 days that you will be able to go and pick it up. You got a window of 7 days to get your car. Now, my headquarters here, the Bermuda Triangle Research Base, are on the western side of the island. So for me to drive from where I am to San Juan, with traffic time included, is always about 3 hours. And I also had an expedition arriving in San Juan. So my plan was, well, I'm going to just kill two birds with one stone. I'm going to drive to San Juan and get my car and give myself a couple days, if need be, to get my car. And then when the expedition group comes in, I can use my car to drive around and, you know, it'll be nice for everybody. So I set out and I get a rental car here. And I drive to San Juan, drop off my rental car, and they say, your car is at the port. And I'm thinking, okay, fine. That means I got to go to the port. It means I take a taxi cab to the port. When I go to the port, I figure I'll pay whatever my final payment is on the taxes they charge you, which is called excise tax. And then I'll sign some papers, and I'll drive out of there with my car.
So you
makes sense to me. That's what I was envisioning would happen. So again, I drop my rental car off at the airport, and I have I get into a taxi cab, and I say, here's the address. I literally have the address written down for the port. I hand it to the taxi cab driver, and he looks at this, and he says, I don't know where this is. And I said, well, what do you mean? You got the address right there. He says, I don't know where this is. Okay, we're going to take a break. That's when things start going downhill, right then and there. And when we come back, I'll tell you about the ridiculous experience that I had to get one simple thing like that done. It gives me deeper insight into how things work here in the Bermuda Triangle. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange, going out to high strangers around the globe. Thanks for spending your evening with us. Next hour, I have a very fun and exciting announcement to make on the program. And let me go ahead and remind everybody that obviously the storm season is upon us, okay? And who knows what's going to be happening soon, whether it's tornadoes, hurricanes. We're already getting a taste of it. There's been a lot of rain. A lot of stormy stuff, and you don't have to be sitting there in the dark, helpless, when your power goes out. You can have the Sunshine Simple Solar Generator for the home. It's the world's most powerful solar generator for the lowest price, and it will actually help you lower your power bill every single month if you use it, and it will give you independent power when you can't rely on the grid. Go to sunshinesimple.com. And just watch the free little video there. This thing is created by my team and myself, and you'll see why we made it. So, again, watch the video at sunshinesimple.com. And we also have a brand new payment plan that will work for you as well. So before the break, I was talking about the experience that I had working with this ambiguous government system here in Puerto Rico in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle, which helped me understand why that maybe some experiments are done here, hidden and buried in paperwork. Well, here I am in the taxi cab. I tell the driver I need to go to this port, and I give him the actual physical address of the port written down verbatim as it was given to me there. And he looks at it and says, I don't know where this is. Now, this guy's a professional taxi driver who's at the airport. He sits there for 10 minutes with his cell phone, messing around doing research on Google, making phone calls. Finally, he goes, oh, okay, I think I know where it is. So he drives me to this big sort of ghost town of a port, sprawled out for acres and acres with all of these big, you know, cargo shipping containers stacked everywhere. And I'm about to set out into this rather eerie-looking parking lot and walk a great distance. And he says, do you want me to wait here? And I said, yeah, that's a good idea. Why don't you wait? So I walk across the parking lot. I find a guard. He wants my ID. I give him my ID. And then I go through that layer, and there's another guard. And he wants an ID. And I give him an ID. And he says, go up to window number 4. So there is nobody around. There are a variety of windows there, but they're all vacant. And I go up to window number 4, and there's just a note there that says, out for lunch. And I look at my clock, and it's past lunchtime, and I'm wondering, well, how long is this lunch going to go? I got a taxi cab waiting here. So I turn around and I go back to one of the guards and I say, I'm supposed to pick up my car here. I got a taxi driver waiting. You know, do you think I should tell him to leave or stay? And the guard says, well, have you been to the Hacienda yet? And I said, no. What is the Hacienda? And he's like, oh, yeah, you got to go to the Hacienda first. And you got to pay your taxes there on the car. And then they'll give you some papers. And then you bring those papers back here and get your car. And I said, oh, okay, it's a good thing I asked you. I guess I need to go to the Hacienda then. You know, thank you very much. So I get to the end of the taxi, and I say, this dude says I need to go to the Hacienda. And the driver goes, oh, yeah, the Hacienda, that's where everybody goes to pay their taxes. I said, bingo. He said, yeah, okay, well, let's go to the Hacienda. So we drive off into the town of San Juan, and we get in front of this big old, you know, kind of classic, stately-looking building. And he says, this is the Hacienda. And I said, great. And he goes, you want me to wait here? And I was like, nah, this is probably going to take a while. So I go into the Hacienda, and I tell the woman sitting at the front desk that I had a car shipped in, and she says, oh, well, you need to go through this door. I said, okay. So I go into this door, and I see one of the longest lines I've ever seen in my life. Okay, this makes Disney World look like a cakewalk, all right? And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, it's one of these lines that just winds back and forth from left to right, you know? So I'm like, well, this is going to take a while because there's like three people working back here, and none of them are in a hurry. And by the way, I have all my luggage with me. So, and my luggage, it wasn't a giant amount, but it's very well packed with equipment. I have, like, night vision goggles and meters and, you know, there's some heavy stuff in here. So I stand in this long line. I don't even know how long I stood in this line. Just inching forward, sliding my bags along. Finally, I make it up to the front of the line. I get up there, and the woman there doesn't speak a lick of English. I find that it's weird. In Puerto Rico, the people who speak the least English, supposedly, are the people who work for the government. Coincidence? So, she says, well, hang on. She sort of communicates to me, I need to get somebody, right? So she brings back another woman. And this woman's, you know, her English is okay. And so I explain to her what I need, and she's not understanding it. And so I show her some stuff on my cell phone, and she's like, oh, okay. Yeah. You need to go to the other Hacienda.
Oh, Lord.
What?
And I said, the other Hacienda? And she goes, yes. There's another Hacienda that deals with this. And I said, well, where is that Hacienda? And she goes, I don't even know how to tell you to get there. And I was like, what? And so she starts speaking Spanish to all these people around her, and they're all like, oh, man. You know, they're like rubbing their brows like, oh, God, we got to tell him how to get to the other hospital. So I break out a map, and I say, can you point to where it is on the map? And they're like, I don't know, you know. Yeah, so they're rallying around the map, and now everybody else, all the 100 people in line behind me are getting all ticked off. And finally, there is this dude who's standing in line me two back who is watching all this and just takes sympathy on me and says, I will take him there if we can just get this moving. He says, don't worry about it, amigo, I've been in your situation. He says, if you can wait for me, it shouldn't take long, 5 minutes, and I'll drive you there. This is a complete stranger. For all I know, he's a serial killer, but at this point, I'm like, fine. You know, so I wait. The guy finishes up. We go out. We get into his truck, and he starts driving me off to the other Hacienda. And he's telling me the whole time, like, man, don't let them screw you when you get to this other place, because they're going to screw you probably. And I'm like, oh, this is wonderful. You know, and he's giving me all these tips about things to do and say, which would be great if I spoke Spanish. But it's very difficult when you're not dealing on the same, you know, language here to negotiate stuff under these circumstances. So anyway, he drops me off at this other building that's, you know, a long ways from the first building that's supposedly the Hacienda building. So I go into this Hacienda building, and I walk into the room, and the line there is twice as long as the line was at the last place. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And the reality sinks in that there's just no way that I'm going to be able to get my car today. So I'm thinking at least maybe I can make it as far as I can through this process to get as close to that point as possible. Because they, and I contacted Lauren. I was like, Lauren, would you find out the latest I can pick up my car? And she says, the ports cut you off at 3 p.m. Okay, it was already after 3 p.m. I was like, well, okay, then I know I'm not going to get my car. And all these other places that I'm dealing with, they're closing at 4. So anyway, I wasn't sure if I was going to even make it up to a desk by the time the place closed. So I stand in this line, possibly the longest line I've ever been in my life. I finally get up there to the desk, and I'm just like, ah, thank goodness. Okay, and I pull out, you know, my information, and I say, here's what I need to pay this tax on this car, blah, blah. And the woman who spoke, she spoke pretty good English, and she goes, oh, wait just a second. So she turns around, and she does something, she comes back, and she was like, okay, so you gotta go to the DMV first. And I was like, what? She says, yeah, you gotta go to the DMV, and you gotta get paperwork from the DMV, and then you bring that paperwork to us, and then we'll give you the papers that you can take to the port. And I said, okay, where is the DMV? And she goes, you don't know? I said, no, I don't know. I just, you know, I have no. So she's like, oh, I don't know where it is either.
It's a relatively small island.
Yeah, it's only 100 miles by 30 miles. Where is the DMV?
Where is the DMV?
So at this point, I look at my watch, and it's like 4 o'clock, and I'm thinking, well, I bet you the DMV doesn't stay open until 5 around here. But I go out, and I'm trying to flag down a taxi cab. I finally get a taxi cab. If I'd called a taxi cab, I wouldn't have even known exactly how to describe where I was. So the taxi cab driver picks me up, and I said, I need to go to the DMV. And he was like, oh, they've closed already. So they closed at 4. I was like, okay, well, that's what I figured. Well, I have accomplished nothing today. You know, I got here, and that was it. I got here and stood in line for hours and hours, and I've accomplished nothing. Fortunately, I thought, I guess it is fortunate. The driver of the taxi cab, he had shipped a car down here once. And I told him what that, you know, they told me to do, and he was like, oh, no, 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 no. He's like, no, no, that's not what you do. He says, what you do is you go to the port first, and the person at the port is going to give you some papers. And then you take those papers to the DMV, and then they'll give you some papers. And then you take those papers to the hacienda, and then they'll give you some papers. And then you take those papers back to the port, and then you get your car. And I was like, okay, so I need to start over tomorrow back at the port then before I can do it. He's like, yeah, yeah, you need to start at the port. And I knew that the port opened at 7 o'clock in the morning. So I go to my room, crash out in my room, and in this room, this hotel, I had no cell phone signal, no Wi-Fi, no nothing. I'm like in a Faraday cage here. And I'm ready to get up the next day and start my big adventure. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'll explain what my next day was like. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Sail! Sail!
Speaking of strange, coming up next hour, I have a special, fun, and exciting announcement to make to all of you. So I hope you will definitely stick around for that. But since we only have a few minutes left this first hour, I better hurry up and tell you about the rest of my experience trying to get my car here in Puerto Rico. So I figure I need to be at the port at 7 o'clock the next morning, right when the doors open, so to speak. So I wake up at 5:30 so I can be in a taxi cab at 6:30 so I can be at the port at 7. I go to the port. This time the woman is there, and she tells me, okay, here are some papers. And she says, now take these papers to the hacienda you were at yesterday and pay some money, and then they will give you some papers, and you bring those papers back here, and then I will give you papers to get your car released. I said, okay. So I go there, get some papers, bring them back to you, you give me my car. She says, yes. I'm like, okay, well, that actually sounds fairly simple now that I know what I'm supposed to do, right? So call the taxi. He comes back to get me. I take the taxi cab to the hacienda. Once again, there's a considerable line there, even though it's early in the morning. Not as long as the day before, but a big line. So I stand in this big line, and I finally get up to the woman at one of the women at the counters there. And I say, here's the paperwork from the port, and I need to pay this excise tax to get my car. And this woman doesn't speak English, and she goes, arbitrario. And I'm like, what? She says, arbitrio. I'm like, what? And so I'm trying to speak a little Spanish to her, and she's communicating to me that I'm in the wrong place. I'm like, what are you talking about? So she finally explains that there's another office called Arbitrio, and I have to go there first and then come back there. Now, fortunately, Arbitrio, as it turns out, is at least in the same building. I go exploring the building, and I'm like, here we go again. You got to be kidding me. You know, here I am again looking for some new place. And they don't even have the word Arbitrio on the outside. It says something like Department de Inquisición, right? And so I go into this new place, and I sit down, and there's only like four other people there, but it's taken forever and forever and forever, and finally they come up, and they pick up a sign-up sheet, and they call the next guy, and I'm like, crap, there was a sign-in sheet. So now I go over and I write my name on the sign-in sheet, and then I'll sit back down and wait and wait and wait. Finally, I just had to get up and say something to somebody like, hey, can somebody help me? So they sit me down with this dude, and he asks me for my driver's license, and he asks me for my Social Security card. Good thing I carry that around. And then he fills out a bunch of papers, and he says, okay, now you take these papers back to the other place that you just were, and you give them these papers, and you pay your fee, and then they're going to give you some papers, and then you bring those papers back to me.
What?
Yes. So, sure enough, I take those papers, and I have to go back and get in this line again. This is the third time I've been in this line, all right? So, at this particular place. So I go, for the third time, I'm in this big long line. I get up there. Finally, the woman says, okay, you pay this money. It's a good thing I knew the money had to be paid in cash. Because if you got to that point and you didn't have the cash, they'd tell you to turn right around and go get the cash. It's got to be cash. So I paid the cash. She gave me some papers. I took those papers back to the Arbitrio place. They took those papers, did some processing, gave me some more papers, and said, take these to the port. So I get the taxi cab again and go back to the port. By this point, I've spent hundreds of dollars in taxi cab fare over 2 days, by the way. I go back to the port. I give them these papers. They take those papers, and then they give me some papers to take to another guy to get my car. After I get the car, I say, okay, how do I get my car registered so I can drive it legally? And they're like, oh, well, you know, you got to go to the DOT, basically, or, you know, or whatever, the DMV sort of thing. And then they're like, well, where are you going to be stationed at? And I gave them my address here on the West Coast. And they're like, oh, God, really? Oh, well, you got to do it out there then. You can't do it here. And I said, so there's nothing I can do in San Juan? Nope. So I had to go all the way back out to the West Coast, and I'm still working on getting my car registered. And let me tell you something, folks. I could talk to you for 3 hours about this process and other processes that I've been going through here in Puerto Rico that are just as bad, that are that inefficient, that are that muddled, and it makes it very easy to understand how things are buried here in a lot of crazy paperwork. We're going to take a break. Thanks for bearing with me, letting me vent a little bit. When we come back, I will tell you something fun and exciting that I'm working on, a big announcement. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.